Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann. Back in December of last year, it was leaked that the USDA would be easing school lunch standards for health and nutrition. The Trump administration said it was planning to permanently adapt these nutritional rules for school lunch and breakfast programs, allowing children to eat food with more salt, sugar, and less whole grain. Effectively, their point is if kids don't want to eat these school lunches and they have sourced with better food, why do we want to invest in these additional standards? Or maybe I should say, not standards, but additional costs. Hey, right, it's sound plan. At 10 years old, kids should really know what to eat, right? And besides, this approach gives them all the calories that they need, plus more to get through the day. And that's all that matters. It's all stuff about energy, right? Just so you know, these programs impact 30 million kids in 99,000 schools across the U.S. Hey, they've got a plan. And at least that's something, I guess. We can save money by not paying for fresh fruits and vegetables. Kids don't like them anyway. In fact, get this, we'll combine them into a single dose of strawberry milk that has enough sugar to choke Dr. Pepper. That sugary milk can wash down a pile of highly refined white flour in the form of pizza slices and breaded fried chicken nuggets. Well, effectively chicken byproduct nuggets, maybe. And that's all injected fructose to fuel your kid's young brain. Don't worry, we'll balance it out with a well-rounded diet by rolling back sodium regulations. That's part of the plan, too. So, now we've got some more salt to retain those liquid sugars pumping through your kids. Hey, kids, now, you got a lot of energy for the rest of the day. It's a gift that keeps on giving. Then we tell them to sit down, stay still, and learn something. Why would we expect anything different from this guy who eats crap, washing it down with a dozen diet sodas? But when he's making decisions for your kids and how to feed them, in fact, he's planting a seed for poor eating habits and perpetual shortages of nutrition, leading to the modern obesity and plagues throughout our society. It's time for Trump Foundation to get more bullish on medical devices and pharma stock. Mind you, this is the same president who entertains our star college athletes at the White House with a cornucopia of fast food offerings that Colonel Sanders would find offensive. In fact, the only time Trump has uttered anything to do with healthy food during his presidency is in a recent screw-up where he called Tim Cook Tim Apple. And even then, he's walking that back. Earlier this week, under the guidance of Secretary Sonny Perdue, the USDA did announce these new regulations will become permanent in our kids' school lunches. My goodness, we've lost perspective. The guys who are supposed to be fighting for us, for the families who really need these nutritional services, are literally trying to poison our kids. And where's the backlash? All right, I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to say serenity now. Well, as we try to do here on Sourcing Matters, we focus on solutions of change. We chat with folks who don't let this bad behavior get in the way of doing great things. Today, we're lucky to have two guests looking to address these problems in school lunches. Guys defining what we should feed our kids, looking out for others in need besides themselves. There's a good lesson there. Today, we welcome Adam Kesselman and Vince Kogan. Hey guys, how you doing?
Doing well. Great. Thanks for having us on the show.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time, and I look forward to hearing what you're up to. Hey Adam, let's start with you. So you're the executive director and board member of the Center of Equal Literacy. Your site states that you are dedicated to cultivating education for sustainable living. You state that students need to experience and understand how nature sustains life and how to live accordingly, and that you encourage schools to teach a model sustainable practices. So one of your core curriculum seems to be around food and nutrition. So could you tell us a bit more about what I think it's called Nourishing Students Program in California is about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually have an initiative called California Food for California Kids. And the Center for Reading Literacy has been involved in fostering, reinforcing connections between the classroom, the cafeteria, and the garden for 24 years. We're in our 25th year and have a long history of supporting innovators like Alice Waters and the Edible Schoolyard. We were one of the original funders of that project and have worked on creating model wellness policies that have been recognized nationally. And at the heart of our work, we're a systems thinking organization, and we're engaged in whole school systems change. And so, you know, we engage with school food because it's a perfect way to connect students with nature. And, you know, it's something that we do at least three times a day, and everybody in school has the opportunity to engage with their food and learn how it connects back to nature and ultimately how nature sustains life. So the California Food for California Kids initiative seeks to foster those connections. We created a program in 2013 called California Thursdays. And the idea behind the program was to create an easy way for school districts to engage in systems change. So at the time, everybody was saying, you know, school districts have to serve healthier food, demanding that. And school food is a challenging space to work in. It's more complicated than running a restaurant, for example. So school food service directors were saying, you know, well, we'd like to change food, but we don't know where to start. And so we were working with Oakland Unified School District and came up with a strategy to focus on serving a freshly prepared meal made with California-grown food one day a week. And it created an opportunity. We called it a bite-sized implementation strategy to address changes in procurement, in recipe development, in marketing the food in appealing ways to students, and to communicating to the school community. And since 2013, the program has grown from one school to 89 school districts in the state of California. And the program has really framed systems change for school districts in a way that was accessible. And it created shifts in the supply chain going to school districts. So as more and more school districts were diving into their procurement and looking for California-grown food and looking at how they could prepare fresh food items, they were asking their distributors to find these items. They were looking to their local community and buying from farmers. And they were engaging their food service staff with training on how to prepare delicious meals from scratch. So it's become this systems change strategy that we're really excited about. And we have fostered a community of school districts that are working towards serving more fresh foods to students in California.
Sounds like you fostered a movement. That is absolutely fantastic. I want to come back to that in a moment, Adam, to talk about how you've been able to roll that out to broader parts of the state. But Vince, let's turn to you and talk a little more about your background and some of the things you're working on. So Vince Kogan is the Director of Nutrition and Services and Warehousing at the Natumas United School District in Sacramento, California. So, Vince, please, if you would tell us, and what I've seen from what you've been up to is working with those, educating the kids, the parents, and the community about the value of good food. Tell us more about that.
Yeah.
I've been working in food for about 22 years now. I'd say a good majority of that comes from education. I had the fortunate opportunity to work at a culinary school designing curriculum, and that taught me how to engage people into things they don't know they like yet, to teach them about food. And although I've been working in food throughout my career, I landed a job at Natomas Unified School District in about 2012. So, like most food service establishments, we serve food in bulk quantities. But one thing that's very interesting about school food is not only is it a means for physical nourishment, but it's a way to educate kids about things they don't know they like yet. Throughout the school day, they're doing that with math, they're doing that with science, they're doing that with English, but I'm viewing the cafeteria as an extension of the classroom where we teach kids about things they don't know they like yet. So, fun. I think I have the best job where I get to see kids look at a kiwi for the first time, ask me, like, how do I eat a tamale, look at something like, we serve salad nova lettuce in our salad bars, and they're like, what is this? I've never seen this type of lettuce. So it's a fun experience, and it's just teaching them about not only just providing them with physical nourishment, but teaching them about all the different varieties of food. So in addition to providing about 10,000 meals a day, we do breakfast, lunch, supper, and snack. We also do community gardens, school gardens. We do a lot of nutrition education. Being in Sacramento, I get to have the opportunity to partner up with a lot of local organizations, politicians, just to teach them about where their food comes from. And being here for 7 years, some of them have even pursued careers outside of high school as a nutritionist, dietitian, and culinarians in the food service industry.
That's got to be rewarding, showing a direct and tactile representation of your work, and that, and you both should be commended for that. And Vince, let me ask more about that. If you're, as you talk about breaking down these silos within, we even talked to colleges about this, of saying, look, you got all these different academic centers, let's find ways of using food as this mechanism to stitch it together, express economics, express environmental issues, the benefit of human health, the medical space, all of these things can be tied together. And I think it's exciting to look at it from a grade school or even high school or middle school type kids, of how they can see it from that perspective. We're incubating these conversations. So how do you do that? So if you're sowing seeds all the way up through maturity and then actually harvesting them and delivering it, can you give us an idea of some of the curricula that you use in getting this to the consumers and to the students?
Yeah, so I mean, we do a lot of community engagement events out of necessity. And I think in general, when you have limited resources, you do things that are unique and it allows for innovation. So a lot of my favorite foods started out that way. You know, in absence of refrigeration, you get things like kimchi, or you get things out like jerk chicken. And school food, when you have these regulations, when you have a dollar or $1.25 to work with, you're forced to kind of step back and either let it bury you or reach out to community partners and say, how do we partner up to achieve this big task? So in Natomas, I have the benefit of having organizations all around me, like the Dairy Council of California is next door. The California Department of Education is 5 minutes away. It's a close drive to the Bay Area where Center for Equal Literacy is. So we get to partner up with them and say, hey, let's teach kids about food. Let's do things like cooking with kids and gardening with kids classes, which was something that the USDA Farm School Grant allowed us to do. So not just teaching the kids, but teaching the adults and the parents and the guardians how to cook. Something as simple as pico de gallo, and have their kids mix up ingredients, have them recognize colors, ratios, and then even in the gardening class, teach them how to do a backyard garden. And now, you know, parents stop me in the middle of the hallway or as they're picking up their kid, they say, thank you. My kid's asking for early girl tomatoes. So, you know, a third grader who's specifically asking for, like, early girl tomatoes or spotted romaine lettuce, for them to know what that type of food that is, that's something that teaches them about food and the community that's around them.
Teaching young aficionados, right? And that they become your best advocates for teaching the parents. That's pretty cool. I know I was hard on the USDA to begin. I got to do a bit of a shock jock element to the begin these conversations, but there's 100,000 people that work for that incredible organization, and I think it's intriguing when we start to look at when honed with what we can do with those resources, and I think what you guys have created as a collective here is one of these great examples. We just have to spool up these incredible examples and express them to broader audiences. And so, Adam, let's explore that. You said you launched this thing in 2013 using bite-size implementation, but California Thursday's districts now serve over 334 million school meals. That's 33% of the school meals in California. That's a lot more than bite-size. How did you get there?
Yeah, it certainly is more than bite-size. And I think that we're focused on creating smart, vital, and hopeful resources and looking at systems change through that lens. So I think one of the things that we did is that we listened to school food service directors, and we tried to create resources to help them succeed on their own and to get recognition, to look good, and to create a culture where food service directors were sharing and helping, sharing with each other and helping each other. So we started out with one district, like I said, and then we said, well, let's just scale this up and see what happens, because framing it as one day, it started as one day a month, was so accessible, and it allowed multiple entry points for the different stakeholders. So not just food service director, but the staff and the students and the parents and the supporting organizations. They understood freshly prepared and locally grown. So we framed it as California, but many school districts are really looking in their backyards and working with farms and producers, bakeries, cattle farmers. I mean, there's so many examples from up on the Oregon border. There's a school district that works with cattle farmers and dairy folks to bring the food to the kids in their community. I think this was really inspiring. So, to answer your question, how did it scale up? I think that it makes sense. And people wanted to be part of a program that was bringing these hopeful solutions to the school food space. Your lead up to the conversation was great, and I think that there are a lot of challenges in the National School Lunch Program, but I think there's so many examples of positive solutions. Vince is doing amazing work in his district. The organizations that are part of implementing National School Lunch Programs, so the USDA and the California Department of Food and Ag and the California Department of Education, they're all involved in that process. And they've been very supportive of California Thursdays and growing that program, both through collaboration and through funding opportunities. And we can tell you a little bit more about that. But we just created events for food service folks to participate in, to learn at, to be celebrated. And over the years, the network kept growing.
Hmm. Vince, do you have something you want to add to that as well?
I think I will definitely attribute California Thursday or California Food for California Kids to a lot of this growth. In my district, the California Thursday logo, which is like one of them is an orange with the California Thursday sticker on it, has brand recognition, not only from the students, but from the community and the administration and board members themselves. So when one of the ways we go about doing this, and the Center for Equal Literacy does a great job of saying, it's pretty simple, serve local food. Here's some guidelines and resources on how to do it. And the smart thing is, like, on this day, a collective action day, we're all going to brand together as a state and do this California Thursday collective action day. It's pretty hard to ignore when you look at your social media feed or if you look at some of the good news coming out of school food, because neighboring districts are inviting local farmers, organizations, ranchers out to these events, and they get to meet them. And then it's also an opportunity for a lot of local congressmen, congresswomen, and politicians to come out and just see all the things happening with food.
So you guys both bring up an interesting point that I must ask. So I'll say this just straight out and say, well, we're not all California for many reasons. And California represents a significant portion of our fresh veg and fruit. I think 33% to 40% of the total amount that the U.S. eats comes from California. So how can we in other states, from your suggestions or recommendations or insight that you've gained, start to trickle or start to poke into this, and not that we're going to get to 33% of school meals being locally sourced, but do you have any suggestions for the other 49 states on how we can move in this direction?
Well, I'm sure Vince will have some great suggestions about food service specifically, and Vince is certainly a thought partner with the work that we do. I think that it's a community process to do this, and California Thursdays, Vince, I'm glad you brought that up. It is a brand, and it's a easy to understand framework. And so we've seen the program emulated in New York, in Minnesota, in Nebraska. These states all have Thursdays programs, actually. But there's a very strong farm to school movement nationally that is supported by many organizations and so many dedicated food service directors and staff and schools that support the food programs that are connected to the local community, that are serving fresh food, and that are incorporating education into that model. So, California is a great place to be doing this. There's no doubt. But there's incredible agriculture throughout the country, and there are some really great examples where this is happening. From Michigan to New York, Georgia, Minnesota, Oregon, another thing to point out is that school meals are definitely on the radar of legislators. So this year in California is going to be interesting. There's some policy that's being pursued to support more California-grown food in schools. Plant-based meals, potentially there's some legislation for organic food going to schools. So there's a movement, and school districts are, as David Binkel famously said, he's the former food service director of LA Unified, schools are the biggest restaurant in every town and in every city, and nobody knows it. We serve in California over 1 billion meals a year. That's a lot of buying power. So we're hoping to harness the buying power of school districts and shift it to support local economies, to support environmentally friendly foods, and to support the health of students.
Vince, did you want to talk a little more also on the engaging with the food service companies?
Yeah. To add to that and to transition in, California Thursday, California Food for California Kids, it's not just about ingredients. I will admit it's easier to do it in California than anywhere in the nation. But, you know, Adam and I constantly talk over the years, and we try to pinpoint what exactly this is that we have going on. It's become more evident that it's not about food or just local sourcing itself. California Thursdays, to me, has become about a culture of innovation. So culture innovation in just how we approach speech-fresh cooking. What I mean by that is, you know, yes, we'll connect you with local farmers, but, you know, one thing that I send a bunch of my staff to is, are some of the professional development trainings that they've done to teach the frontline staff on how to handle knives, how to do cooking techniques like braising and roasting. And even with that, a lot of our suppliers have reacted to it. 2013, 2014, I can have easily gone to a school food show, and, you know, the question was, what does this contribute to the meal pattern? Is it compliant? Now, as I go to food shows, it's like, is it local? Is it a California Thursday product? Where before we even ask, they're labeling certain ingredients or certain items as California Thursday. What that normally means is a clean label, it's local, and you can, it can also be a starter kit as you do some speech crash cooking at the school sites.
Adam, you had mentioned the idea of funding this, and obviously this is not just coming from public monies. Vince, you had expressed to me that increased participation leads to more revenue leads to better ingredients and better food. So how did you guys go about launching this? Through what resources did you get? And I bring it up because we have a diverse list of listeners, from philanthropic givers to people that actually run their own school districts to politicians who may want to participate. So what advice can you give our listening audience?
First of all, I'll say that there are great examples of school districts serving restaurant quality food and using the federal and state reimbursement to purchase the food and to run their operation. And there are, you know, the districts that participate in California Thursdays are doing that or are transitioning to that model. So ultimately, it's cheaper to buy fresh food than it is to buy processed food. Of course, we need more infrastructure. So school districts are looking at bond measures to fund kitchens and infrastructure to support more fresh food. The Center for Legal Literacy is very fortunate to have great funders and support. One of our funders is the Tomcat Ranch Educational Foundation. And they have really believed in this program from the beginning and have supported our work to create the resources to help school districts create the shifts in their program. And we leverage that support with support from, as I mentioned earlier, the USDA, the CDFA, and different philanthropic organizations. I think that philanthropy is very important in moving the needle in school meals because it is such a large industry and there's a lot of need from infrastructure to education. But we're also seeing support come from private industry because, you know, that's where the food's coming from. So investing in improving the supply chain and distribution and transparency in the supply chain is all very helpful to increasing the quality of the meals served in schools. It really does take a village. And I wanted to say, I was listening to your episode with Marion Nessel on the way into work today, and I really like that she talked about how this has to happen at the local level, and that, you know, we're voting with our forks and voting with our vote, I think she said as well. But school meal programs provide the opportunity for students to vote and have a voice. And we're seeing more and more students are really conscious of the connection between their food and climate change and equity issues throughout the state and throughout the country. So this is an incredible way to engage students. And what we're seeing is it really is happening at the local level, that it's important to foster community and cultivate networks that can support this broader systems change. So it's really a bottom-up approach. And there's so much philanthropy out there and support from state and federal government that can support the myriad ways that communities are approaching systems change.
For my last question, I wonder if you both could share a story or anecdote about kids or kids' families that have partaken in your program and some of the impact that you've learned about their participation.
Vince, do you want to go first?
Yeah, definitely. One story. I'll use her first name. In 2013, I had a student at high school who didn't like her school meal. Her name was Rachel, and her science teacher let me know because that's what she chose to do her science experiment on. From that, I met with her and a teacher and tried to explain all the rules and regulations and pricing structures on what makes school food different than compared to the other Wingstop restaurants or Jack in the Box that she wanted. So we decided, hey, help me out with some school food recipes. Help me create them. Let's start this culinary club. It was at Intercom High School. We had the Intercom Culinary Club. And through that, it became a way for us to look at food. Kind of the intention was to survey her and her friends and what they wanted to see in food. But, you know, all around that time, we were joining on with the California Thursday program. And we were taking her to the Capitol. She ended up on the news talking about school food, meeting legislators, people from California Department of Education about school food, and even helping me out with our first collective action day in school food. So from that and all the things that her club got to witness, they wanted to take all the money that they were raising and cook breakfast for their staff every Wednesday morning. So they made breakfast burritos, just asking all these questions about food, how we did it, and all the rules, regulations, nutrition requirements we had to meet. So she's now at Berkeley getting her undergrad in food science nutrition with the intention to be a registered dietitian so she can kind of continue that work. But that's a great ending to it, but I always want to emphasize that it started out with her not liking school food. I think just engaging with her and introducing her to all the different resources that we had, she chose to make a career out of it.
Very cool. Adam?
Yeah, well, I'll go back to the beginning when we started the program and we really didn't know what we were doing at the time. And it was really about, you know, how can we inspire a community to want to, quote, you know, put in the extra work to make fresh meals for the kids? And at the time, I had transitioned into working at, with the center, I used to run a, an organic school lunch program in San Francisco, and I was a chef, and, you know, I never understood public school food because we weren't serving public schools. We were serving independent schools, and I really wanted to understand, you know, what all the challenges were, and I started working with Oakland, and I had so much fun building a community with the staff that were so excited to use their the skills, their culinary skills, and to transition away from a heat and serve model to serving fresh food that expressed their skills and their love for the students and their cultural backgrounds. And over, we developed this program with Oakland over the course of a year, and it was just such a rich community building experience with the staff and with the students, going to different schools and doing taste tests and seeing kids' eyes light up. I know that might sound cliche, but it really is what fuels me and so many people that are involved in school nutrition, that it's important that we are exposing children from a young age to healthy, fresh food and connecting it back to the world that they live in, their communities, their health, and tying it to their actions. So being part of that process of developing the program and working with the different stakeholders. I have ongoing relationships with the folks that we cook together in Oakland, and they're just very happy memories for me and great relationships. So it's just been a lot of fun. I think food brings people together. Food is smart, vital, and hopeful, and I'm really excited to be part of the movement that's bringing more fresh local food to kids in California.
Great stuff, guys. Vince, where can our listening audience learn more about what you're up to in Sacramento?
You can follow the Natomas Unified Facebook blog.
Okay.
Or on Facebook. I'll also be at Vince Coggan at Twitter, and then NUSD Food on Instagram.
Okay, I'll put some links in the write-up. And Adam, how about the listening audience? Where can we learn more about what you're up to at the Eco-Literacy Center and some of the other work that you're involved in?
I think the best place is ecoliteracy.org and Center for Eco-Literacy on the various social media feeds. Yeah, and we look forward to hearing from people.
Well, this has been a fantastic experience. I mean, talk about a model for solutions of change, an impact that has now affected 334 million school meals a year, started as a bite-sized implementation and has some incredible scalability to the rest of the country. It is connecting with where consumers are headed. And to hear the stories of Rachel Science Project, which leads to initiatives like a culinary club and then a future career in focusing on this and making this place a better spot than we left it, is a testament to both your work. So I can't thank you both enough for partaking in today's conversation. I learned a great deal, and I know our listening audience will as well. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Adam Kesselman. Thank you, Vince Coggan. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.